So our topic is flood insurance, flood mapping, and flood pricing now. And the first of our three speakers is Alex Sanchez, who's General Manager Policy, the Economics and Taxation Directorate of the Insurance Council of Australia. Alex was appointed General Manager, Economic and Taxation Directorate after extensive experience in both the public and private sectors as an economist and policy analyst, having worked in the energy sector, banking, housing and transport industries. So please welcome Alex Sanchez.
Thanks very much for the opportunity to present today. It's awkward always following John Trowbridge. I feel a bit like the poacher following the gamekeeper, but I hope today I'll be able to give you some insights that you might take away as you develop your thoughts around not only flood policy but responses to Mr. Trowbridge's inquiry. Let me start by saying that what I thought I'd do today is take a slightly different track. Simply, much of what's been said in this area has been said, and it's all been in the public arena and the like. So what I thought I would do is to give you some new material that's recently been done by us at the Insurance Council. Basically a consumer behavioural study that was done by us at the Insurance Council following the catastrophes in Queensland and less so in Victoria. But what I also want to do in introducing that material is challenge some of the urban myths that have developed over the last couple of months in this area of policy, because let's say there is a fair amount of urban myth making going on, and urban myths surrounding the capability or capacity of the private sector insurance industry. So let's start by looking at how we're actually going. And as you can see, there's more than enough capacity in the industry. About $4 billion has been delivered, 166,000 claims lodged. Interestingly enough, only around about 3% of those claims that have actually had an effective policy have been denied, and most of those, or not so much denied, are in dispute or denial or whatever, but basically it's around hydrology and informational requests. So by far the most of the claims have actually been paid. So the industry has got more than enough capacity to fund these sorts of catastrophe claims. Now let's compare us to, if you like, our largest or one of our largest critics, and that's in the area of federal policy. And let's see, and the budget gave us an insight into that. For Queensland floods, for Yarzi and for the Victorian floods, we've outlaid around about $3.7 billion. The total Commonwealth assistance that was in the federal budget papers is in the order of $3.9 billion. So as you can see, it's very, very comparable. So the industry is outlaying almost the equivalent of what the federal government is outlaying, but the federal government outlays include the outlays for infrastructure. The assistance to individuals and businesses is much, much less than what the private sector insurance industry provides. So a priori, you can argue that there is really no market failure. There has been no prudential problem as a result of these catastrophes. Money has been going to assistance has been going to those with a valid policy. So the reasonable question is to ask, what is the issue? What is the problem? So in answering that, we turn back to Mr. Trowbridge's remarks about the perceptions or some of the perceived inadequacies with private sector general insurance. So we wanted to test that in the actual community itself. So we undertook a consumer study shortly after the disasters, where we asked 1,600-odd insurance purchase decision makers across Australia using Roy Morgan's single source survey. Now, many of you might be familiar with Roy Morgan's single source. We use them to do some of our work in the non-insurance area, but also they are effectively a household expenditure survey on a rolling basis. We got around about 400 participants across four different zones. Flood affected Brisbane, 400 from the remaining suburbs of Brisbane, 400 odd from the remaining suburbs of Queensland, and then 400 for the rest of Australia. So there is a bias, of course, in there towards Queensland, but it was deliberately intended to evaluate what were consumer views on these issues. Now, importantly, unlike many telephone surveys and the like, we targeted the principal decision maker in the household. The survey was an internet-based survey and actually threw you out if you weren't the principal decision maker. And the person had to have purchased home insurance, and because it was internet-based, we asked them to have their insurance policy close by. So the results really are testing the boundaries of what consumers actually, what choices and judgments that they made. And as I said, it was undertaken shortly after the events themselves in late March and early April. So let's quickly turn to some of the results. The question we asked is, insurers pay for the flood claims for the uninsured? And here the answers were mixed, but the clear preference is no. Interestingly enough, in flood-affected Brisbane, the answer of no was higher than the other parts surveyed. So this is very contrary to popular belief that those in flood-affected Brisbane demanded that insurers should pay the claims of those who did not purchase flood insurance. Then we asked them, OK, you've answered yes or no, what are the reasons why you did so? And again, the reasons why they believe that claims should be paid, as you could imagine, insurers were profitable enough, and it's the Aussie way to do so. What wasn't very popular was the view that insured households were not at fault, nor that the view was that it wouldn't have some long-standing effect on their premium down the track. Turning to why they shouldn't be paid, and here, as you can expect, it was almost the flip side of the previous answer. Householders must be responsible. A very large positive response rate across all parts of those surveyed, and clearly an understanding that it will affect their premiums down the track. There was no empathy, if you can use that term, for the government assisting the uninsured, and they did believe that companies could afford to pay. The wisdom of paying was another question altogether. Now, we asked them, okay, if you were to ask to pay for other people's risks, would you be prepared to do so? And the answer was unequivocally no. Flood-affected Brisbane, Queensland and the rest of Australia were fairly universal in their dispassion towards funding other people's risks. And we did say a property tax or levy. We weren't interested, obviously enough, as the Insurance Council, in insurance taxation to fund these things, and we didn't explore the option of an increment on insurance policy. We looked at what was, in effect, a land-style tax to fund other people's risks. We then said, for those who were willing to pay, how much were you willing to pay? And again, not a lot was the answer. 90% of Australians were prepared to pay no more than $4 a month to protect other people's risks. Now, that chart is the cumulative frequency and includes those who said no. And as you can see, the majority of Australians aren't prepared to pay more than $100 a year to pay for other people's risks. So they're the sorts of judgments that people have to work in when addressing some of the challenges of pricing for these things down the track. One of the things that we're able, and this is where the real myth-busting can take place, one of the things that we're able to do was identify in the questionnaire whether or not the household believed that they were in a risk a zone that was likely to flood. and it was a specific question, and we were able to extract from that those responses. We were able to find that around about 576 households in the survey said they resided in a likely flood area. So in their insurance take-up of those, 193 purchased and 208 didn't. So a roughly a 50-50 split. We then went back to those, each of those, and asked, well, what are the major factors for your decision-making? For the households that didn't buy insurance, they simply believed that their home was not likely to flood. As you can see, that was the bulk. We had a range where one represented wasn't at all important to them and 10 represented it was very important to their decision-making. Contrary to popular belief, the fact that flood cover was too expensive for their property or that was unable to, didn't rate very highly at all. So effectively, the households in the flood zones who didn't purchase insurance said they didn't believe their house was likely to flood, which suggests the importance of good information systems and drawing awareness of the risk of their property is arguably more important than the insurance component. Though those households, which we also were able to pull out of the flood zones, those who are highly likely to flood, and those who identify themselves as being very, very at risk from flooding. The fact that insurance was cheap and affordable was more important for that group of people than it was for those in the other flood zones. Now, this suggests that if you believe you're at high risk of flooding, then the cost of flood insurance is less important to you than those who don't live, or more important to you than those who, sorry, if you live in a high-risk flood zone, cheap and affordable housing is more important to you than those who are in a high-risk flood zone. And this suggests that the debate around flood risk pricing is probably much more targeted than what was hitherto believed in some of these public policy debates. So what does all this mean? It basically means that the Insurance Council is right about its 10-point plan. That the things that can do to improve information systems are arguably more effective. So the standard definition for flood, improved disclosure around these things, the provision of adequate flood data, and of course the removal of insurance taxes that drive a wedge between what people pay and what cover they get. Improved land use planning, improved building standards, mitigation, education, as you can see, you didn't actually believe you were in a floodplain zone, and we want to make sure that the effectiveness of disaster relief payments are well measured, because as you can also see, consumers also endorse our view that householders should take some responsibility for their own risk. So that's some new information that's just come to hand. It's the first time that's been released to people. I hope you can make use of it as appropriate, and I look forward to taking any questions.
Thanks for that quick briefing, Alex. Slightly mind-numbing after lunch to go through them at that speed, but we can come back to pick up some of those points.